Welcome to another exciting edition of Near Mint Comic Radio. Your yes. local comic shop shrunk down, camera irradiated with both its parents, tragically killed before its eyes, and aired live every week only on the Non-Productive Network, the only place that would have us. I'm your host, Frank, joined in studio as always by Ken and Pete.
Yo, Frank.
Yo, what Ken. It is. Yo, Pete. We rank and review comics from best to worst. That's mint, near mint, good, fair, and poor to you newbies, and try to guide you in what to read and what might be better to avoid. On this week's episode, we're going to review a couple of books, something from all new, all different Marvel. What? It's all new and all different. It's two things. It's both those things. It's it's one of those. Yeah. And also something from DC, from a dynamic duo that is not Batman and Robin. And I am going to review a little pop culture event you may all have heard of, called New York Comic Con. Woo, woo, woo. Yeah, all right. We're good. And that's it. We're done. That's our show. Those are our reviews.
Oh, good.
They're all average. No. Yeah, so let's start off by... Which one do we want to go in through first? I think I'll talk a little bit about Comic Con. Just very briefly. We'll get back to it later on. I feel like, and this is coming from an old school comic fan, one of the best things about New York Comic Con has rapidly become the cosplay.
Mm.
Now, I'm not one of those people who obsessed over cosplay. Like, it's not my favorite thing in the room. Or costuming, if you're not weird. That's what you would call that. Dressing up. You know? That's what we used to call it back in the day. Back in the 40s when I was a child.
Trick-or-treating?
Mm. Yeah, we call that trick-or-treating. We did that one day a year. Not every day of the year. We didn't have our own sewing machines. We had to use needle and thread.
Town sewing machine.
I totally got off topic. But anyways, yes. But no, like, I'm not a huge cosplay enthusiast. I would say that Pete is probably more interested in costuming and cosplay and stuff like that than I am. But I'm also not a curmudgeon. I'm not one of those people who says, like, oh, there's too many costumed kids, and why, it used to be here for the grammar, or if you don't want to make a Simpsons reference, it used to be about the artists and the comics. I feel like there's a place for everything.
Mm-hmm.
I will also say that it seems like the biggest, most interesting thing at New York Comic Con really was the homegrown costumes. Artist Alley was a lot of fun, too. And every once in a while, you come across with a big company that put on an interesting display and said interesting things at the con. But to be blunt, hands down, if it was the cosplay play weekend, I think it would do almost as well.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Might be a little controversial.
Okay.
What do you think? Do you think this is a result of the cosplayers stepping up their game, or of the artists and the companies stepping down their game?
First of all, I would like to say that the artists in Artist Alley are always amazing. They're a close second for me. A very close second. In fact, I saw some amazing people just signing, and no lines near them, which is a little distressing, but also kind of fun that you could. They're so approachable, including Larry Hama. I almost freaked out. So cool.
Wow.
Yeah. But to answer your question, putting aside the actual artist in Artist Alley, if you're talking about the big companies, the big comic book companies and media companies, I would say without a doubt, they dropped the ball. I love what the cosplayers do. I'm not going to belittle their accomplishments, but when you feel like you're the ugly stepchild, that's a horrible thing to say, but of the con circuit, I don't know if there was anything interesting revealed at New York Comic Con. It didn't seem like it was that exciting. It was very hard to get into panels, and the booths themselves were just like jam-packed with people, which may have been partly the cosplayer's fault. There was a lot of posing for pictures. But it just wasn't that exciting. The biggest media company, or I'll just say company, the best presence last year was, I think, Weta. That Hobbit display with Smaug. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
This year, I think I have to give it to Progressive.
Progressive,
the insurance company. What they employed this year, and you may have read about this already, but they had Protecticorns. There are people with the flow robe, right? The flow Progressive outfit. Yeah. So white pants, white shirt, and the apron. Progressive on it. They had wings. They had unicorn masks on, you know, like big
horse
masks.
Like the horse head mask.
Like the horse head, but it's a unicorn. All white. And wings, and they had wands and scepters, and if you text them, they would come and hold your place online. So it was it was not unusual to be waiting online for something and turn around and suddenly there are three unicorn people, or unicorn Pegasus people, protectorcorns I should say, standing behind you, looming, just silently. It was goddamn terrifying. Terrifying. All over the convention, they were just... But it was like an incredibly useful thing. You got phone chargers, and you got a little storage locker for free. All provided by Progressive. Amazing. But again, cool. Good on Progressive. It was fun.
Yeah.
They gave away free flow costumes. But a very useful thing. But also, like, kind of sad that we got nothing awesome from Marvel or DC or anybody else. They were just sort of there. And I don't know. Kind of disappointing in that respect. But to focus on the cool things, Protectorcorns. Also, LexCorp offered free Wi-Fi, which was pretty awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, overall, I think it's still like a pop culture experience that people want to go to. I feel like they need to. I think Super Week was a good idea. I think they need to expand that concept a little bit. Maybe spread it out for more than just the weekend and just the Javits Center. All right. And maybe make it a little bit more inclusive. But there was some cool stuff.
Yeah. I heard there was some cool Batman news out.
It was there. Mm-hmm. I did not hear it because I was at the convention.
I'm not sure exactly what it was. Oh, because there was that big... they were being teased. There was a big Batman announcement.
Hmm.
I don't know what it was. I've heard a couple of interesting things about Batman.
Well, give us a couple.
Like... the fact that they have confirmed they are doing Batman the Killing Joke.
Okay.
Animated.
Animated movie, yeah.
And that it's greenlit for an R rating.
I've heard that as well, yeah.
Which wow. It damn well better be. Right. Otherwise, you're not telling the Killing Joke. That on Gotham, Gotham, Paul Rubens will be playing the Penguin's father.
No way.
Yay.
One I didn't realize was it's again.
Again.
Oh, I forgot. Oh, yeah.
He was the father. Batman Returns.
I didn't even know that was him.
Really? Yeah.
Actually, I forgot saw his parents.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does occur. I remember it now, yeah.
Fun fact, I always conflate two scenes from two different movies in my head.
Okay.
And that's the scene of the Penguin's parents abandoning him.
And Mufasa.
Batman Returns.
Lifting some. No.
And Peter Pan in Hook. In the flashback in Hook.
Oh, all right.
When
there's
Peter
a
Pan in the baby carriage wheels away.
There is a vague similarity. I could give you that. Yeah.
So I always forget whose parents throw him into the sewers and who just like wheels away in a baby carriage.
I don't know.
Penguin is just wheels away in the baby carriage.
I don't know if you guys have been watching Gotham, but it is bonkers. It's such a good show.
I haven't seen the most recent one.
Oh, God. It's so ridiculous. All right, but refocusing, I do want to talk about one really cool thing I found out, and I don't know if we have enough time to talk about it in this episode, but I will tease it for a future episode. I accidentally went to a panel called Thunder. T-H-U-N-D-E-R. I'm not spelling the word thunder to you. I mean,
you are.
It's an acronym. For the... I should have thought of this beforehand. United Nations Reserves.
Okay.
It's a superhero team for the United Nations. Wait, that's been around as a comic since the 60s. And Wally Wood worked on it.
Huh.
And I had no idea that this thing existed. It was a very interesting panel. I'm going to go through the details of the panel a little later, maybe, or in a next podcast.
Oh, no, Thunder Agents.
Thunder Agents.
Yeah. Okay, no, actually, if you had added the agents to the end of that, I would have known what you were talking about.
So I removed the agents when I heard Thunder, and I'm like, oh, I know that team, because I thought it was something else, like agent. I thought it was a different superhero team when I went to the panel, but then I was like, this thing is perfect for me. It's like the perfect intersection of, like, my international law background, I know my enthusiasm for comics and
rooting for the underdog,
and all of this is it's being re-released by IDW, which is great. And there's some interesting things from this. So this is Len Brown and Wally Wood had worked on this originally. I can't remember the year. I'm thinking it's 64 or 65.
I'm guessing the big twist in this, like the whole Hook angle thing, is that because they work for the UN, they have no real powers.
Ah, interesting that you were to say this
oh, no.
in a snarky way, because that's one of the things I was very curious about. So on the surface, this is a superhero team brought up by people of various different nations, empowered by the UN to go into crisis situations and to fix it. It's like their superhero team, like similar, in my opinion, to like G.I. Joe, where G.I. Joe is an American task force. Thunder would be a UN peacekeeping force, as it were. Again, superpowered individuals, all with scientific devices, all empowered in such a way by scientists working for the UN to give them superpowers in a very particular way. And each time they have a superpower, it usually comes with some sort of like moral quandary of whether they should use it or not. Very interesting concept behind this. My question for the panel, I didn't get a chance to ask, and of course, I don't expect you guys to answer, is how do you make something like this make sense? And I've been thinking about it a lot in the last few days, because we, as like in our modern society in today, we have a major problem with the idea of the UN having its own, let's say, Black Ops team or standing army. Like, that's a thing. That's a bad thing. We typically don't want, although there are times where like UN peacekeepers, we kind of want them to get involved. It's the weird gray area that I don't know if the current team on the IDW book is dealing with, or are they treating it the way we've treated G.I. Joe for the past, 30 years? Where it's like, yeah, no, it's totally fine that America's army goes out to fight snake terrorists, because snake terrorists, they're not a thing. No one's going to be offended by this, but it's weird. So I don't know. I feel like this is an interesting comic and coming out in a very interesting time, that when I first heard about it, I almost immediately dismissed, because I don't know if you guys did the same thing I did, but when I heard, oh, so the UN put out a comic book, I immediately thought of like the pro stars. And like when the NFL comes
NFL
up with their
all pro.
Yeah, that. Yeah. When it's like, you know, some other company like kind of leverages comic books for a pathetic thing for like a week and it never goes anywhere. And I don't know what this book is, although I have read this classic, the 50th anniversary, and it's really interesting. It's really good. It reads like what you would imagine an old G.I. Joe would read like. Hmm. It's just, it's a different world. The world has changed so much since this book came out. There was a time when the UN, we could empower them the same way that we would empower like G.I. Joe, because what did the UN help fight? There were bad guys. There were human bad guys. They fought the Axis powers. You know, the UNs were the winners of the Second World War. So like they could have like human villains. I don't know. It doesn't work today. It doesn't seem like it works today, because it seems like we would have problems with the UN having a superhero team to go fight that Middle East situation. Like, we're not comfortable with it. How do we turn this into a comic book that deals with it? And here's the news from from this panel, is they, and this is a whole nother conversation we could have, is that they've got their own deal to make a movie and a TV show. And they're trying to turn it into a franchise, a universe.
Hmm.
And there's two aspects of that that's really interesting, which we could, again, go into. One is it's a joint venture with a Chinese production company, much like Iron Man 3, I believe. Mm. But a lot has been like they're making sure that everyone knows this is a completely joint venture. This isn't just we're going to leverage the Chinese market. They want the Chinese market or the Chinese filmmakers to help produce this thing in a real tactical way. And the other side of it is everyone's making a universe franchise. Can the world hold this many franchises before people's brains explode? I find these are all fascinating questions I didn't get a chance to ask the panel.
I think we need a franchise multiverse.
I think that's our real world. That might be how the real world is. It's just a multiverse where all these franchises exist. Other universes
out there.
That
story is a lot more boring than it happened in my head then.
Yeah. It's really uninteresting. I mean, except Superboy in our universe can really punch through reality. Man. So okay. I don't know. I find all this really, really fascinating stuff. I'd love to get any of the people behind Thundar, the new initiative, or the classic people to come. I keep calling it Thundar instead of Thunder, but that's just because of my own speech impediment. I think everything is an 80s cartoon.
It's a very specific speech.
It's very, very specific.
I'm impressed. I'm but jealous.
We
a
need
bit.
To. We got to reach out and get them to call in one day and get some answers. Have you guys? So you seem to know Thunder agents.
I know aware of it.
Yeah.
It's I not enough to speak to it at all.
But you have heard of them. I have not ever heard of them. I totally thought they were a completely different thing when I walked into the panel.
I didn't know that they were a UN sponsored team. Does the UN actually have something to do with this?
Yes, it's the Higher United Nations Defense Enforcement Reserves.
No. Okay.
And in the real world, yes, they had something to do with the production of the comic. Oh, and the best part of this panel, and if you can find videos of this, is the chairman of the year. Who is in charge of the UN?
Is it still Ban Ki-moon?
Yes, he did a video about for the panel for New York Comic Con where he talks about the importance of working together. And it ended with him pow zapping, punching the air with pow zap bubbles coming up. And even the panelists were like, I can't believe we got him to do that. 50% of the panelists were comic people. Yeah. And the other 50 people were UN, Doctors Without Borders and people who were working on major issues. And they're like, I've never seen him talk this way. And certainly not punch the air with pow zap. So it was really good.
See, the Pope would do that, no problem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, he wouldn't need the special effects.
No. Yeah. It actually does produce word balloons.
I will also say that, and this isn't pandering, I give this book a go read it. This is a 50th anniversary really? Thunder Agents.
Is this the new scale?
It's definitely go read it. I haven't finished the whole thing yet.
Okay,
I'm curious
so you can't
about
give the official I can't near say, mint rating.
But if you like classic kind of war stories, this thing is right on the edge of being ridiculous. And from I said, this also hits my comic bone because this is Wally Wood. So you get some amazing storytelling, there isn't even an explanation of what happens in between these two panels when we get Alice Robbins, the damsel in not so much distress, coming to get into the radio room, and she clobbers somebody with, I guess it's a pipe, something in her hand. But the way the storytelling builds itself out, he's clearly making the mold for future comic storytelling. When you need to describe things to happen and when someone can just see it and not be told it. And so from that is a whole nother appreciation of the book.
Interesting.
Definitely worth getting. So I'll probably give it a near mint. It's worth it for that alone. It's pretty thick. Nice. All right. That's my quickie Comic-Con review. I've been promised a Power Girl and Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
Now, this is there a buddy books, Ken?
As far as I know, it's a mini series right now, but that picks up from the pages of Harley Quinn, the current Harley Quinn book, which I haven't been reading, but now after this, I really want to start reading. Power Girl, at some point in Harley Quinn's book, was found by her, and Power Girl is suffering amnesia. She doesn't know who she is. And luckily for her, she's got Harley Quinn to help her. because she's not really kind of helping her. It seems like she's kind of using her as her own pet pal to fight adventures with and everything. And it's a fun kind of setup. One of the reasons why I bothered to even take a look at it was it brings us Amanda Connor, Jimmy Palmiotti, and Justin Gray together.
Cool.
Who are currently working on Harley Quinn, or at least were responsible for the current relaunch of Harley Quinn.
I was going to say, it's the regular series that they're all working on wasn't enough for you. You needed to get the boob window.
Well,
let's face it, that was the deciding
to
factor.
To be honest, actually, it wasn't even that. I loved their run on Power Girl 5-6 years ago. I thought it was great right before the relaunch of the New 52.
Oh, okay. So you'll blame it on just the character.
Yeah, okay, cool. I do like the character.
No, I'm being harder on you than I should.
And their interpretation was great. So when I saw that they were revisiting the character, I'm like, this is great. And not only that, they actually brought back an interesting romance from that previous incarnation when they were writing it of Vartox of Valeron. And it's an interesting love affair that we've had.
We promise he wasn't a Doctor Who villain.
Yeah. We get to see a very fun, kinky, break the fourth wall kind of story that you normally expect from Connor, Palmiotti, and Gray. It's a very fun read. I don't want to spoil too much because there's a lot of sight gags. I if you're a fan of it, I recommend picking it up. It's totally worth it.
If you're a fan of those two characters or that concept, that style.
Of that storytelling, yeah. It's hysterical.
Oh, all right.
You have to not be overly PC to read this.
Yeah, I can imagine. All right, that's pretty cool. What did you rate it?
I'm going to give it a near mint cool. So far, yeah.
Very good. All right, now we're running out of time in this episode, but I did want to say at least we hinted at it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say we did read a book from the New 52?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'll say this is directly tied to Comic-Con because it was distributed not at Comic-Con, but outside Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
And I regret, you keep saying we're done for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly, I think this is going to have to be the last episode of Near Mint.
Ever?
Ever. Because comic book storytelling as an art form has reached its apex.
Really?
With the comic book that I hold in my hands right now.
Huh.
This is a comic book co-published by DC Comics and, of all people, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh, God.
Wait, what?
The I know, kernel I know of two about. Worlds.
Yeah, I should have known that.
Oh, no.
I was wondering how Pete managed to levitate into the room. It's because he's reached some sort of level of astral projection, I assume.
There
yogiism.
Is, yeah. This is a transcendental book. This is a book where the Colonel Sanders meets his Earth 3 evil counterpart, Colonel Sunder.
Whereas
the Colonel is all about our Colonel that we know and love,
the real Colonel, yes,
is all about doing things the hard way,
mm-hmm.
doing it the right way. Colonel Sunder is all about doing things the easy way. And he manages to recruit a couple of the Flash's rogues gallery, Captain Cold and the Mirror Master.
This is insane.
And they, when the Mirror Master meets him, he becomes convinced that this guy is going to help them take over the Earth. So they bring him over into our Earth. And the Colonel just opens up a fast food restaurant. Colonel Sunder opens up a fast food restaurant.
As you do.
And just kind of sits there. Hires some henchmen to go rob banks. And figures, you know, in about a year or so, we'll have enough to open another franchise.
What the hell is the point of this book?
Well, understandably, because of the commercials Colonel Sunder is running, Colonel Sanders gets upset and decides to go fight Colonel Sunder.
All right.
Completely blowing off Flash and Green Lantern, who are there getting ready to investigate the bizarre link between this new fast food restaurant
and these
and
heists.
No, forget that. Colonel Sanders just says, go wait outside. I'm going to go in and take care of this.
Right.
And he manages to save the day with his incredible power of taking off his suit and having another suit underneath it. I'm not kidding.
Who the hell wrote this book?
Now you're going to make me go
find
that.
I don't think it's
pretty easy.
I can't imagine a human being wrote it. It must have been some sort of god.
No, let's see. It's Shane Edwards and Tony Bedard.
No, of course. Well, listen. What do you rate this book?
Honestly?
Yeah.
It's this is above me. Double mint. That's good.
Yeah, all right.
I'll rate it double mint.
Bing.
The letter, the backup stuff, it's they dive so whole hog into this. It's like they don't even try to cover up how ridiculous the concept is.
To be perfectly honest, I love this. I love the fact
it
the tasty cake-esque nature of this story.
They don't even send the villains to jail at the end. They Colonel Sanders just puts them to work at a Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Mm, that seems like it's sending the wrong message about your
well,
franchise.
They ended up getting victimized by Colonel Sanders anyway.
Oh,
and Captain Cold is icing down the drinks while Mirror Master is cleaning the windows.
Makes sense.
There's a page in the back that has a picture of the real Colonel Sanders, an actual photo of Colonel Sanders, and a rundown of all his superpowers and technology, including his cane, which has a is useful as both mobility and as a defensive weapon, and features a hidden button to remotely activate any deep fryer. You know, all sorts of great stuff. A gravy pen. He has a gravy pen.
All right.
So he can sign tasty autographs and deliciously top off mashed potatoes.
Wow.
And it also has a letters page, which has one of my favorite letters page gags of all time in it. I am not kidding. Guy writes, this is a letter from Stephen, Kentucky. I'll read the first part. To whom it may concern, I have just finished reading the story entitled The Colonel of Two Worlds and have noticed an egregious error on your part. And he goes on to explain a stupid continuity error.
Okay, in the book
the book that you've just read.
Interesting.
And the response written by Colonel Sanders himself is, Dear Steve, thank you for writing in. The answer to your question will be revealed in a future issue. I'm not sure how you were able to read my adventure in time to have your letter published in it, but I will say that time travel is a dangerous pastime. You can mess up reality doing things like that.
That's good advice from the Colonel. It's what that is. We're actually we're almost out of time. I'm very excited that this is going to be a new miniseries, right, from DC?
One can only hope.
All right, good. Now, we did say something about all new, all different Marvel. What I want to do is, because we have no time, damn it, we want you to email us which books you are currently reading from all new, all different Marvel, and suggest the ones that you think are the best, the strongest.
What do you want us to talk about? There's too much.
Yeah, nearmint@non-productive.com. We'll give you a little hint. We are looking into Doctor Strange, and boy, has things changed.
Mm-hmm.
That was a rhyme. To save you some time, I didn't believe. Read it in a comic book store and maybe not buy it right away. But that's my review!
Way to finish strong, Frank!
But when the Crimson Dynamo finally assured me, well, I knew
you was involved in a robbery. That was 2-2 after that, a quarter to 3 in the main street.
So we went out.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.